Animadye Mahimabhir
Ajaya
Bhir Vibhuti
Bhir
Chatur Vimshati Bhishtatvai
Parita
Mahadivihi Animaye Mahimabhir
Ajaya
Bhir
Vibhutivihi
Chaturvimshati Vishtatvai Parita Maharadivihi Anima Adhyayahi, headed by Anima. Mahima Bihi, by opulences. Aja Adhyabihi, headed by Aja. Vibhuti Bihi, by potencies. Chatur Vimshati Bhi, 24 in number. Tatvaihi, by elements for the creation of the material world. Harita, all the Vishnumurtis. We're surrounded. Mahat Adibhi, headed by the Mahat Tattva. All the Vishnumurtis were surrounded by the opulences, headed by Anima Siddhi, by the mystic potencies, headed by Aja, and by the 24 elements for the creation of the material world, headed by the Mahat Tattva. In this verse, the word Mahimabhi means Aishwarya or opulence. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can do whatever he likes. That is his Aishwarya. No one can command him, but he can command everyone. Shad Aishwarya Purnam. The Lord is full in six opulences. The yoga siddhis, the perfections of yoga, such as the ability to become smaller than the smallest, Anima Siddhi, or bigger than the biggest, Mahima Siddhi, are present in Lord Vishnu. Shadashvaryayi Purno Ya Iha Bhagavan. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 1.3. The word Aja means Maya or mystic power. Everything mysterious is in the full extent in Vishnu. The 24 elements mentioned are the five working senses, Pancha Karmendriya, the five senses for obtaining knowledge, Pancha Gyanendriya, the five gross material senses, Pancha Mahabhuta, the five sense objects, Pancha Tanmatra, the mind, Manas, the false ego, Ahankara, the Mahatattva, and material nature, Prakriti. All 24 of these elements are employed in the manifestation of this material world. The Mahatattva is divided into different subtle categories, but originally is called the Mahatattva. So Lord Brahma here was feeling by his position, he was feeling very proud. He was feeling very confident and very strong of his place. And then because of this, then he thought that his potencies could be applied upon the Lord. But unfortunately, then it was not successful. Anyone else? Yes, but not on Lord Vishnu. So then Krishna here is making the point, is that Brahma, by his austerities, he's having so many potencies. And he gets something according to what is his austerity. But Krishna has all these potencies in full, not less, always in full. So that's what's special about him. So then whatever he has is greater than Brahma's. Then whatever he, and also his Maya is greater than Brahma's. So then we can see that Brahma then will naturally be overwhelmed. And that's the idea, is that in correction, if the problem is slight and it has been done by some mistake or there's no improper attitude, then one can very easily, with some, you know, minor pleasant words or some silence or even some mild chastisement, one can correct. But when we see that the problem comes up, that if the person has an attitude, then that correction must be overwhelming. Whatever it takes to overwhelm, but it must overwhelm the person, because of their attitude, they think they're very special. So that has to be removed, that has to be overcome. So whatever the situation that comes up has to be greater than the attitude in which it was performed. So then we see here that Krishna very easily does that with a smile on his face and completely ignoring Lord Brahma. It's not that he's standing there with all his opulences and trying to instill fear in him, because he has to establish that, yes, I am God and don't you understand it? No, he's God whether he understands it or not. So that's not a problem for the Lord. He doesn't have to prove himself in that way. He simply has to correct the improper behavior of Lord Brahma. So, then in this, then if you want to get someone's attention, then the easiest way is then you don't pay attention. And you have something else to keep you busy, right? Generally, one thinks, Lord Brahma, he walks into any situation, everybody stands up, everyone offers respects, everyone offers obeisances. He becomes the center of the situation. Means, other than if Lord Vishnu's there, he is the center, because even Shiva is his son. So it doesn't matter. Anything within the material world or just outside the material world, he is the center. So then, naturally, he expects that. He comes there, he comes, and then everybody is going to be creating something. So he becomes the center of the rasa. He becomes the vishai. And everybody else, according to their particular mood with him, then will relate, and then he can interact with them and bless them and, you know, deal however he needs to deal. But here we see that he's coming along, Vishnu is having his time, couldn't care less about Brahma. Going on, his devotees are there, they don't even worry about it. All living entities of the universe which Brahma has created, they don't even care for Brahma, they're just worshipping Vishnu. So in that situation, then it's going to create quite a shock, because it's his attention is elsewhere. He gets attention from everybody. This person is giving him no attention. It's very, very unique. It's going to create a very powerful reaction in Lord Brahma. That he's going to notice that in this assembly, he is nothing special. Not only that, he may have these siddhis and all these things. They sit in his court and they assist him. But here they're surrendering and they're just part of this personality. So he can see that it's something special. It means because he's Brahma, then all these potencies sit in his court. Only because he's Brahma. He's not Brahma, then they don't sit in his court. But this person is the origin of these. So from that platform, then also Brahma will become very much amazed. And in this, then he will start to contemplate what is his actual position, because that's the real thing to do. One has to come to the point of consciousness. Means any instruction, any correction is of no use if it doesn't create consciousness. If it doesn't create awareness, then what's the meaning of it? What is the purpose of it? Okay, by ego, one can establish one's position, and that superior over someone else is very nice, but in actuality, who's benefited? We are not benefited because of the ego. The other person's not benefited because it's only been overcome by ego. So just a bigger ego has overcome a smaller ego. So still it is all in ignorance. There still has been no correction. But by knowledge, by instruction, then one overcomes these things. Otherwise, there's no way to overcome. How do you overcome ignorance? It's not by more ignorance. Right, some bigger ignorance will get rid of the smaller. It may get rid of it, but it replaces it with bigger ego. Right? You've been overwhelmed by that person, so then you want to be like that. Right? Whatever conquers you, you want to somehow or another be connected with. there's some respect for it. So if it's been by ego, then you want that more ego. How you were overcome, that's what you want. So that's of no use. But here the Lord has overwhelmed him by his opulences, by his kindness, by his devotion, I mean the interaction with his devotees. So he is being educated about his real position. What is his real situation? That's very different. That itself then will bring him to a higher platform, as we will see in the future. So this is actual teaching. This is actual correction. Is that you have to bring about the understanding of what is wrong, like that. And then whatever method is necessary to be the carrier, like you have an instruction or you have a medicine. If you want it to work in a particular place of the body, there's various carriers that will take it to that particular place. Because if you take the... Yeah. So in the same way, the instruction is there to correct Brahma, but it should be done, given in such a way that it will get to where it needs to be gotten. So here it's false ego. You know, here it's he's trying to do something that he thinks he's special, rather than appreciating the Lord's opulences, right? It means it's known, you know, it's like, how you say, 1,000 times in the day of Brahma than the Lord has his pastimes in Vrindavan on earth. So generally one would think it would get through. But most likely is there's the aspect of opulences there, so it's more obvious that yes, this person is God, some variety of incarnation. But once in a day of Brahma, then we see he comes as a human and takes on all those attributes, though he's the source of everybody. So this is what bewilders Brahma. Because how is this kid just sitting here laughing, joking, you know, sitting there relaxed and this, you know, this is not God. God is everyone respects. He respects God. Everyone respects Brahma. So therefore, who's this kid? So then Krishna has to show that he's beyond. He doesn't have to prove anything. So then we see his, yeah, these are there. Now in that, why use these? He could use other things. He could use some universal form. He could use these different things. Like, no one's interested in the universal form. Right? It's, you know, it probably wouldn't get you too far with your friends or, you know, with your wife or your kids or... You know, it might make them pay attention, yes, but as far as enhancing the relationship, we see it didn't work for Arjuna. It didn't make his relationship with Krishna any better, right? Didn't help Dhritarashtra, didn't help Duryodhana, you know. So, you know, we don't hear of people seeing it and then it deepens their particular attachment for the Lord. So then that won't be a great thing. So here is, he's presenting what people want. They want siddhis. They want opulence. That's why the living entities in the material world. From Brahma down, they are here for one thing only. That's opulence. Nothing else. And then, with that opulence, then there's the idea, I will enjoy it. So if you show the maximum opulences, then you know this guy must be the boss. Right? He's got more than, Brahma's got more than anybody, and this person has more than Brahma. So then this person must be something special. So that we see here is that this is something we have to be very careful of, because opulence is the thing that catches the attention of the living entity. That's how we're here. We wanted to enjoy Krishna's opulence, right? The internal potency is opulence personified. That's what we wanted to enjoy, right? Not something else. So the why did we forget means we are here because we forget Krishna. Why do we forget Krishna? Because we want his opulences. Right? And if we have the opulence, what do we need Krishna for? So that's what's going on. That's the idea. So then this desire for enjoying these opulences must be given up. We see Krishna's enjoying. He's interacting. Simply by his glance, then the desire for that interaction, that rasa, is awoken, right? Prosperity is there. And by his smile and that, then they feel protected. So what the living entity really needs, that awakening of a relationship, that maintenance of that relationship, you know, that taste of that relationship, that is gained by the Lord, His association. He can give, He gives the opulence, He gives the protection. So in His association, all these things are there. So then Brahma then will start to think, because it's in an area that makes Him special. Right? His opulences are great. Means we hear of Yudhishthira Maharaj having a shabha, or an assembly hall, that was greater than anything on the earth, enough to drive Duryodhana to the point of such extreme envy. Then he inquired from Narad Muni, what about the opulences of the shabhas in the universe? So then he explained Indra, Varuna, Yama, and Kuvera. How much greater was their size and opulence? Like this. We have to remember, this was pretty opulent. The pillars, it was... how big was the shabha? I think it was about 1,500. Remember, I think it was 1,500 hands or cubits. So that would make it 2,200 feet. So it's like half a mile by half a mile. It's not so small. Like that. But then he hears about others that are bigger. Indra's is 800 miles by 1,200 miles. Like this. And Kuvera's, Varuna's there, 800 by 800. Like this. Kuvera's is fixed in the sky. It doesn't touch the ground. It's hung by the roof, not by the ground. Like that. Indra, Varuna, Yama, they sit on the ground. They can move at will, but they sit on the ground. But his is fixed to the air, so therefore he can take it anywhere by that method. So then they hear about that opulences, and that's very great, and who's there in the assemblies. But then in Brahma's hall, it's so unique that as you see it, and then you perceive it, so then you think, wow, this is very nice. And as soon as you start to describe what's there, it changes. So you can't describe it, because as soon as you start to describe it, it just changes. It takes on a new foot, because that's already been appreciated. Right? No one appreciates it, it sits there. But as soon as someone goes, oh, that's nice, and isn't that not nice, then immediately it changes. So it can't be described. It's so amazing. And all these Lagima, Mahima, all these different, they're all sitting there in personified forms in his court. So when he has things to discuss, they can give their opinions like this. But we see here, then this Krishna, what he's manifesting goes beyond that. So we always have to be very, very careful that these opulences are not what attract our attention. In the beginning, yes, that may happen. That's understood. But as we advance, we have to understand that this has to go to the Lord. Brahma is in the material world because he's thinking he is the Lord of the elements in the siddhis. But he's not. Krishna is. So all the living entities, all these personalities, they're worshipping the Lord. And because of that, they're getting the blessings of the Lord. So then they can live with the Lord. That's what's special. That's what's important. If that doesn't happen, then what is the use? What is the importance? So one has to make that bridge, because being engaged in the service, that's the first step. Then you're busy. But then you also have to see that the mind is engaged. And the mind has its values. And then you have to see, are those values something that you want some of the Lord's opulence? Do you want to enjoy that? And if it is, then we have to see, well, how can that desire for enjoying those things be engaged in the Lord's service? That will remove the desire, and that will connect us to Krishna. Otherwise, they'll just increase their desire, right? Brahma's a devotee. We always have to remember that. He didn't get there by not being a devotee. Right? So that's there. Indra's a devotee. Varuna's a devotee. Yama's a devotee. They're all devotees. So they're there because they have attachment for opulence. Prestige, position, power, sense gratification, all these things. They have an attachment, therefore they've been given those jobs. because only devotees can manage the universe, right? You're not going to have the demons manage the universe. I mean, they always try. They come up. Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, this one, that one. They always come up. That's their idea. We will manage the universe, not the demigods. And they always make a mess, right? Everything's functioning because of the way the Lord has set it up. The human beings prosper. They perform sacrifice or sacrifices. The demigods prosper. From the demigods prospering, then they provide the facilities for the humans. The humans perform sacrifice. The demigods prosper. By performing sacrifice, they go to the heavenly planets. They become the demigods. They get the results of what's been done here. So it's a cycle. The demons always, because they have a little bit of power, a little bit of potency, they always try to break this. That no, we are the ones providing. They always forget that they got their benedictions for someone else. Even Hiranyakashipu got benedictions for someone else. On their own, they don't stand. But they always forget that. Right? They get a blessing from Brahma, get a blessing from Shiva, get a blessing from Kuvera. And then immediately, that's it. They're the Lord's eternally, and they'll go on. So this, forgetting this because of having attained, the opulence is what is desired, that control is what's desired, as soon as it's obtained, we forget. Why worry about anything else? What we want, we've gotten. But we have to remember, it doesn't last forever. That's the difficulty. So because of that lack of lasting forever, then we see that these problems come up. So then Brahma has put himself into that problem. And so by this, then we will see he'll recognize Krishna's position. He'll come up. He'll organize himself. Right? That's a better way of saying get his act together. Right? So things will work out for him. He'll now take up that more devotional attitude. So this is what is desired. Because once that's there, one forgets about the opulences. Right? Dhruva Maharaj wanted opulence. When he actually got to see the Lord, he said, he's not interested in these opulences. He's only interested in the Lord. So we can see is when you have the Lord, the opulences mean nothing. So all it is the environment in which the Lord is served. But if one wants to enjoy those opulences, it will always be an obstacle. So that is here. Mahatattva means these are anima, they become smaller than the smallest. So that's there. People can become bigger, become very small and maintain potency. That's very difficult. Then we see that the Mahatattva, that's the beginning, where it all starts. The cities start with anima, and the elements start with the Mahatattva. By the Mahatattva, that's everything together. But with the living entities, and with consciousness, with time. So those being there, then it's alive. So that's why it's the head rather than the pradhan. This pradhan is just the material element without time, without ego. So then those become the head there. And then the mystic potencies. Then aja, I'm not sure what is this aja. But it is will be the first or the most, either it's the most prominent of them or it will be the beginning point from there, then you can go into the others, like that. Oh, aja means maya, a mystic power. So the mystic power to be able to bewilder, that's then considered greater. You know, according to someone's ability to do that, then they are given respect. Any questions on this?
So,
if
the
mere
aspect of the world is not going to be,
yes.
There is one iteration of the sense of the day, but it is to have the same appearance of the Lord.
Yes. What's the difference between having the same opulence as the Lord? Yeah. See, is having that liberation where you have the same opulences of the Lord, but one will use all those opulences in the Lord's service because there's pure devotion there. But we must always remember that pure devotion is different from pure unalloyed devotion. So if you want Vraja Bhakti, then even that has to be given up. Liberation has to be given up. Liberation comes as a side thing. Just like if you order lunch, you'll get a plate. You don't have to separately endeavor for the plate. You can't. Don't tell the waiter, please bring a plate also. It's kind of like, yeah. So it's automatic. So therefore, we stress on this point. But in Vaikuntha, they still have desire, though their desires are fully dovetailed in the Lord's service. But it's different is that they set the scenario in which they will serve the Lord. They will have lots of opulence. With that opulence, they can serve the Lord. They have beauty. They can serve the Lord with that. You know, they're an associate. They can serve like that. They're in the same place. They can serve like that. But Vrindavan, they don't make any of those conditions. So it's different. Aslishiva padaritam pinashtumam adarshanan marmhatam karotava. So a miserable condition, no opulence, no darshan, no association. Right? And in a miserable condition, one is not beautiful. Right? So all four have been kicked out right there. That's not the interest. The interest is simply to make Krishna happy. So he decides what's the scenario. So that makes the difference. Vrindavan means he decides how things go. It's according to his pleasure. Outside Vrindavan, or outside Goloka, then it's according to how the devotees want to reciprocate with him. And so then, that's nice. Now you see the demigods, they want to come, they want to see him, offer their prayers and that, get his blessings, things go wrong, he'll straighten it out. And then after getting his blessings, then they want to go back to the heavenly planets and take up their positions, enjoy everything like that. So, and he reciprocates, because at least they're going to the Lord. Vaikuntha, then it's devotional service, pure devotional service. But we see in Vraja, then we have this pure unalloyed devotional service. So it's in a different category. Does that make any sense?
No.
Yeah.
You're describing the opulence in the material world is mainly accumulation of goods and money. People are very worried to accumulate and they're very sad to spend it. They always want the things to keep it together. Can you explain the opulence of generosity and charity?
The opulence of generosity and charity. See, as all these different activities are to create a mentality. So you can only receive if you can give. Right? There's a story told of that there was a student, he had graduated, you know, he had studied from his teacher, and he was very proud of his knowledge. It was called Veda Garba, means proud of one's knowledge that one gets from Shastra. And he thought he was very clever, and he had heard of another teacher who knew more than what his teacher knew. So he had gained followed the etiquette. Whatever he could gain from his teacher, he got that fully. Then only he went to the next teacher. So he went to this next teacher and asked him, "Can you please teach me?" And the teacher, you know, could see his attitude. So he says, "First sit down and have some water." You know, because that's the etiquette anyway. So he came, he brought a pitcher of water, large pitcher, he brought a glass, gave him the glass, started filling up the water. And naturally when it gets just about where you want it full, then naturally you say that's enough. Teacher kept pouring, right? Then it fills up more, then it starts to overflow on the ground. And then the student at this point, when it gets so much water and going and the teacher's still pouring, then the student says, "Don't you see? The glass is full. No more water will go inside. Why are you pouring?" And the teacher said, "Yes, this is the point. You're so full of knowledge, there's no space to put one more drop." Because of his ego. So, because of ego, ego is ignorance. Ignorance means destruction. So, that's the reason we can't let go. We think that by holding it, we have it. But opulence doesn't work like that. It's chanchala. You hold the Lord, you have opulence. But you try to hold opulence, you don't hold it. Right? It doesn't work like that. So if one tries to keep and one doesn't follow that duty of giving away, then that ignorance will be strong in the heart. One will also find that because of that, one can't accept. One can't accept mercy because one can't give it. So the whole idea is something so important like money. If you can't give that, how are you going to give anything else? How are you going to give your time? How are you going to give your, you know, how are you going to give affection? How are you going to, it'll all be compromised like that. It'll all be miserly. So it's all connected. Generally we think it's everything is separated, but that's due to ignorance. Nothing's separated. Means you have 24 elements, that's what it's all made out of. That's what we're working with. But there's nothing more. That all goes back into the three modes. So that's all we work with. We only work within these three sections. Goodness, passion, ignorance. We don't work outside of that. We're either maintaining something, creating something, destroying something. So it means we're either satisfied with what we have, we're hankering for something we want, or we're lamenting for something we lost. Right? Or we're either jealous that someone else has, or we're trying to, you know, destroy what someone else has, like this, or we're working hard to get. That's all. Means due to ego, we think we're very special, and our particular brand of attachment is special that someone else doesn't have. But it's the same. You know, the mother bug bumps into the baby bug. She feels the same rapport in her heart as a human does with their child. Not one bit difference. You know, maybe what she appreciates is different. Oh, cute. Oh, such cute 1,000 legs, you know, something like that. You know, it's like that. Always got such nice compound eyes, you know, like that. And don't his antennas wiggle so nicely, you know, something like that. You know, these things that we... But the feeling is the same. There's the idea that we're humans, it's unique. And as a human, I'm unique. But that's the whole thing. It's just chewing the chew. These bodies that we're going through, these are common stuff. It means every time you go out of human life down into hell and the animal species, when you come back up, you come right back to the exact same form and situation that you left in. It's not different. Because it's just like this. You are taken, like you're taken from your position. You're put into jail. You're corrected. Then you're put back right where you were. It's not that they make you something else. Right? You're a common guy. You go back out a common guy. You don't come back out a king or something. So it's just whatever you're doing. You're sitting around, you know, sitting on the corner, you know, doing the things, eating your favorite foods, wearing your crazy clothes, and talking your jargon. When you come back up out of the species and come back into human life, you're going to come back right in that same spot to see if you learned anything. Right? Last time you're sitting on the corner and somebody goes by and you make some stupid comment and then you go to hell for that. When you come back, they're going to put you back on the same corner, same everything, same guys are going to walk by and then you're going to see, did you learn anything or not? So not only once, we'll maybe doing it many times. So this is nothing special. Right? And because it's a particular combination of the modes, it's not only we get it. Others have had the same form and same look and same everything. Right? It's not that it's different. Like you have a car, right? It's an ambassador, right? It's not just one ambassador, right? There's millions of them. Right? Everyone has the same experience, you know? Nothing works, it falls apart. You know, it's all exactly the same. So that's the thing, is we think it's it. That's all there is. And we somehow or another feel that it's very special. We got, no, but it's categories. You know, you can take all these things. You can take from three and then you can expand out from there. Whatever your psychological system is, then you can do. But it all starts with three. And then 3 times 3 is 9, times 3 is 8, like this it goes. So then it's not. So the whole idea is to not get too worried about it. Means we have duties, we do those duties, but we have to always be on the guard for those attachments, because that's what keeps us here. You know? That's the point. We can be here for a long time. So if we want to get out of here, then we have to give up those attachments. We have to see as, okay, it's for Krishna's service. But still, if it's for Krishna, Krishna still likes to be done in a certain way. right? Just like if I say, I'm cooking for a particular person, or I'm cooking for Krishna, I'm cooking for a friend. Okay, but still, I know the friend likes it in a particular way, I have to cook it in that way. Otherwise, if I cook it in any old way, then I can't say that I'm cooking it for that person. Yes, you're going to cook it for them, they're going to get it, but have you actually cooked it for them? So if you perform the service in ways that are against the principles that Krishna wants, then it's very hard to say that it's for Krishna. You know? So many times we may feel that we can break the whole pattern or system because it's for Krishna. But it's only if Krishna allows that. Because there's certain loopholes that are there, but Krishna's made the loopholes, not us. Right? You chant Hare Krishna, then you don't have to worry about so many other forms of sacrifice and duties and all that. But there are ones that he expects you to do. You know, what the Goswamis did, what the Acharyas have given us, that's expected. We can't now use the phrase, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care. Who said we don't care? Where did we get that idea we don't care from? The Acharyas. Right? And if we got it from them, then what's the definition of we don't care? Our definition or their definition? Right? We learn it from them, it has to be their definition. We can't apply our condition definition on it. Because if we do, then we'll make a mistake because we're conditioned. So, therefore, then, this is very important that these different principles are there. Not that they are as they're, some are directly important, some are indirectly. So something like charity is indirect. Because charity itself can be used for devotional service or not for devotional service. It can be in goodness, passion, ignorance. There's so much variety. But that one is able to give up attachments for something that one is attached to of the material world and for a higher principle, that's important. So that means at one point we'll give up the attachment to the material world for taking up the higher principle of surrendering to Krishna. Right? So to do that, then there has to be the great faith in the spiritual process that Krishna is going to take care, or at least faith in piety, that whatever I give away, I'll get back. You never lose. If it's yours, you don't lose it. You can't lose it. It's yours. So then, if you give it away, you'll get it back. You know? But at the same time, for giving away, you get the credit for that, so it increases it. You know? And if you give to qualified people, then it increases it dynamically. So for people who are more materialistic, they look at that side. Less materialistic, then they'll look at that Krishna's taken care of anyway. It's come to me, and Krishna wants it engaged in a service. Here is a way to do it. It's within the realm of my duties. It's proper. So then I do that. If it's not within my realm, I don't do it. You know, like that. Does that make some sense? So all this is to correct the miserly mentality of holding on to our attachments and not surrendering to Krishna. You know? So then charity means is that you are still dealing with your attachments, but you're doing it in a regulated way that is in connection to Krishna. So the attachment is still is engaged in the Lord's service. Right? It's many times we tend to think that I will get rid of an attachment by ignoring it or just throwing it out. No, there's a method for throwing it out. It's either got to be able to be dropped, and it's dropped, and one's peaceful. Or if one drops it, one doesn't become peaceful, then it has to be engaged. That's how you can tell. If you can just go, okay, I just let go. And if you feel that a great weight has been lifted off, and you can maintain that and like that, that's good. That's best. If you try to throw it off, you can see how it's good to do like that, but you're not able to really practically apply it and the mind is still then not peaceful, then that means then you need to take that particular attachment and engage it in the Lord's service. Right? Or you may get in between, you can drop it for some time, but then you see it comes back up, maybe not as strong as originally, but to some degree. then you deal with that, you engage that, but at least it's been reduced. But in some way or another, one has to be able to distinguish that all these attachments are there, and they will go automatically away if I am absorbed, I'm engaged. So if I'm not engaged, then those areas, the attachments will stay. And if I can engage that in the Lord's service, then they'll go. Therefore, if one has attachments in household life, then that means everything that you have in your household life, down to, you know, the rubber bands on your doorknob, they have to be somehow or another connected to Krishna. Otherwise, it's a form of attachment. Right? I'm so organized, I got all the rubber bands on the doorknob. Right? Everybody else can't find the rubber bands. So it's going to keep one here. So that's why the whole idea is one is unconscious. One becomes conscious, right? You just go on yourself doing, and if we can't become conscious alone, then you become conscious by attachment to another person, that you want to please that person, so you have to become conscious of their needs and moods and everything. And from that, being conscious of the person, because that's more, then you start to become conscious. Now you can become conscious of your money, your house, your paraphernalia, your different things, your activities. So it's just supposed to keep the process going. It's because you have to start from somewhere. The point is become conscious. Then from being conscious, you can become Krishna conscious. That's how meditation works. Until you're conscious, you can't remember. Right? Until there's dharana, focus, you can't have dhyan, meditation. Right? So once you become conscious and you can focus, then you can put anything you want there. And what's recommended is Krishna. There's other things that are just going to make you unconscious again. So once you become conscious, so that's the point. The whole system of the culture and philosophy is simply to make you conscious, whatever position you're in. Doesn't matter. Right? Like even you have a machine, you're a mechanic. It will only run nicely if you're conscious of all, to that degree that you're conscious of everything about the machine, to that degree it runs nicely. And to that degree you're not conscious, then that part of it will break down. Because you're not aware of it. Yeah.
If we follow the system, also maybe we have to follow Brahmashram. In the type of attachment that we have to life, we then have to come Vanaprastham to Vinyasamiha.
Yes.
I hear a foolish argument saying that because Srila Prabhupada was having problems in his family life, he did not. But actually, even if he has a very good family life, he's supposed to take to that state.
Well, yeah, that would be there. See, the difference is between vanaprastha and sannyas. Sannyas is there, if it can be taken, and that's nice. But otherwise, vanaprastha, everyone has to attain to. Because if you die a grihastha, you'll be born one. Guaranteed. 100%. You die a vanaprastha, you may not take birth again. I mean mentality of a grihastha. I don't mean in the ashram. If you're attached, you're going to be born again. It's guaranteed. Prabhupada said, one rasgula, you're attached to one rasgula or gulab jamun. You take birth again. Let alone family, friends, money, this, business. It's guaranteed. So that's the whole point is, that's one angle. So that's why it's recommended, is that you have to deal with your senses. See, what's going to happen is there's an interesting thing. Because devotees don't get into the metaphysical unless they get new agey, you know, like that. But they don't get into the metaphysical, the philosophical, and they get into the malecha. But they kind of miss in between. So now, in between the metaphysical, then you either get into it and just get distracted from devotional service, but rarely they use it for devotional service. So according to the Yoga Shastras, there's seven chakras. And each chakra has predominance in your life for 7 years. So that means 49 years. And the first chakra is the lower chakra. That deals with energy, it deals with sensuality, you know, it deals with your ego, everything's based on that chakra. So then you're going to go through that, and slowly, slowly you get up. Now the last chakra is liberation. is the chakra of liberation. And so then we see devotees, then they, you know, from, what is it, 41 to 49, they start thinking of anaprastha and yes, and the difficulties in household life, and yeah, is it really, you know, the shastras are correct, and we should move away from that, and, you know, make a plan. And I see so many devotees, they make those plans, and they sincerely move towards it. Then when they hit 50, the clocks reset, and it goes back to the first chakra. And if they haven't, situated themselves in that mood of detachment, guaranteed, there'll be another girl, there'll be another endeavor for money, there'll be another endeavor. They think they're young, their chest comes out, they start doing exercises, you know, they unbutton their shirt, you know. I see it. I'm watching around like that. And it's not uncommon. It's very common. Right? Because then it goes back to there. What does vanaprastha do? What is the vanaprastha's main focus? In what like a brahmacharya, you say it's study. Right? A grihastha, then it's his household duties. What do we say is the prominent thing of a vanaprastha? Austerity. And what are they being austere with? The senses. So if from 50 to 57, you're not trying to control your senses are going to drag you down the street. Guaranteed. It doesn't matter who you are, who you think you are. I've seen the biggest devotees go out the window because they're not careful about this. I can see it here in this community. I can see it around the world. It's very obvious. You know? Very meditative, contemplative, and then suddenly they're all, you know, bright and dapper and this and that, talking to everybody. Because all it is just has gone back. So if one's not aware of these things, then this is what happens, you know. And then one will go on, and then 57, okay, you can get through a little bit. And then second chakra also is a lot of energy, right? That's where that sits, you know, okay. So then, okay, that takes you through to what? That's 64. Okay, now we always have to remember that there was, you know, some people really worried that people really liked them when they were 64, right?
The other way,
because
the Swadhisthana, the chakra of water, gives a lot of energy when you are in proper stage, but when you are in old age, the chakra of water dries you out.
Yeah. So like that, yeah. So you see, and you see, that's why they call people at that age, they call them wrinkles, you know, it's an old wrinkle, right? So, and then, by the time then you figure out you can't enjoy it anymore, then it's late, especially for those from the Western backgrounds. Like that, they've already ruined themselves. You know, they've already lived a full life before they even join. You know, so then, what's going to happen to them? They fade out pretty quick. I mean, Indian gentlemen, regulated life, this, that, since they're born. Up in the mid-70s, they're like young men. They're like their 40s, 50s, they have that much energy. It's only in the late 70s, actually it's in the early 80s, that they start to take on qualities of being old that you see sometimes in the 50s, 60s in the Western culture. And so it'll come. You know? So that's the whole idea, is that we shouldn't be bewildered by it. It's that it's there. So we can say, you see, it's nice enough, we can say anything we want. But that's the false ego of the Western culture, is they think just because I said it, it's true. I mean, since I was a kid, you grow up with that. We used to think this, but now we know, right? Every 10 years they rechange, you know, when the books fall apart, then it's worthwhile to reprint them, and then they upgrade it. Then all the science stuff, I remember my father was looking over my shoulder once, and I'm sitting there looking at, I think it was, you know, Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon and all that, and he looked over my shoulder and said, "Where's Palenthian?" And then right there it says that, you know, they found out it was just some goof by some English, you know, guys down at the tip or something. You know, Monty Python got one over on the people. Yeah. So then you know, and he was like shocked. Well, you know, he had learned that as fact, you know. And I'm sure the stuff that I learned, that's, now they don't teach. That's all rubbish. So that's the problem, is just because they say it, that's it. That's good enough. But the problem is Shabda means the Veda, not us. Like that. We're not Shabda. The the Veda is Shabda.
We are shut up.
Huh?
We are shut up.
Yeah, we are shut up. Yeah. Okay. Does that make sense? So, therefore, we can say what we like, but we have to actually be able to technically back it up. Because the Shastra can. You can take something in the Shastra, and from a cultural, from a metaphysical, from a philosophical, you know, point, you can show the connections. But we don't see that in the modern culture. It doesn't worry like that. As long as there's a connection between a man and a woman, or a man and some money, then it's okay. But more connection than that is not, you know, it's okay. But in the Veda, everything has to be connected. It means it can't be anything that you're doing is not connected. It all has something. It's not just chance. So when Prabhupada is given these things, it's not for us to judge. We can judge before we take initiation. We can judge before we take up his mission. Once we've taken it up to judge, then that's not intelligent. That's called faithless. So if we don't have the faith, then we have to understand. We may be big, big position, but spiritually we're no better than a neophyte. And that, even that's a neophyte who's still outside and is not sure. We have to understand that's where we stand. Of course, because we've made that advancement, if we take it up, we'll start from where we were before, when we had the faith. But lack of faith sets us back. That's all. It's just the way it is. You can't perform if you have lack of faith. Someone has faith in something, they go ahead and they have lack of faith, immediately they can't do. Right? But because of prestige, ego, then we still want to hold on to our positions and this and that and go on as if we are still in the same dynamic position. But we're not. Because without faith, there's no focus. And without focus, nothing happens. I mean, that's the way Krishna arranged it. That's material energy. It functions like that. If there's no focus, nothing gets done. So if you don't have a one-pointed, you know, vyavasayatmika buddhi. The other is that manifold, multi-worry about this, worry about that. You know, this one says this, that one says that. You know? So it's like, that's the alternative. So we have to see, okay, it's a problem. That's one thing. The other thing is bring me that person who doesn't have any problem in dealing with material energy. It doesn't exist. Brahma has problem. Right? It was time for him to get married. His wife's off, you know, putting on her, you know, beauty cream, you know, like this. And she doesn't show up in time. He marries someone else. You know, then she comes back, she's upset. I mean, who is that person who thinks he has no problem? The body's a problem. So why won't connection with another body that has problem be a problem? You know, then we have the mind. You know, we won't get into that. Yes?
The question, we're talking about how before initiation we can judge out, you know, mm-hmm. after initiation, and it seems that many devotees that join the movement, you know, the different challenges to their faith and crises of faith aren't there. Prior to initiation, the real challenges take place later on. And, you know, it seems almost unrealistic for us to just say, well, I just have to control my mind. You know, it's not that we don't really kind of like, you know, like, not really that you slay with the demon, slay the demon of doubt with this sort of knowledge. So somehow or other, there has to be a facility to get it out and deal with it.
Not yes.
Just, you know, say, well,
no, we're not saying.
Because that's kind of festered.
No, what we're saying is the opposite. We're saying get it out. The people who don't have faith refuse to get it out. Or they'll use Western methods to get it out. Sit in a room and yell and scream at each other and then feel good that you got it off your chest. You know, but then you've just created Vaishnava aparad. So then your devotional life just goes down the tube. I've watched devotees come and do that. That's the thing is, we can say what we want on that side, but from what it comes in the New Age stuff, we can say that also. We've been watching that for years. In fact, New Age is new to devotees, but New Age is in the West goes back, I think, Yeah, it goes way back. You know, so it's not a new thing.
But the age-old thing.
Yes, but then it has to. That is there, but there's an etiquette for doing that. That's the point. Is there still etiquette? Means, what is the purpose? Okay, you want to reveal your mind. What do you want to reveal for? Just to let them know what you've always thought, so you can put yourself in a better position? Put them in a worse position? What does that got to do with actually advancing in devotional life? You want to say what you want, but is what you want to say worthwhile? Since when is you saying what you want to be the thing? I mean, by whose decision? Is it that is the standard of healthy interaction? You know what I'm saying? It means it may be, but it still has to be able to be answered. The point is, this sentiment has its limit unless it's connected to intelligence. You won't get at the false ego. So that's the difficulty, is that methods are there. The Vedas are full of it. It's so subtle, that's the point. Devotees ignore it because it's too subtle. They can't get it. Krishna in the Gita is saying, you know, he's saying that you do your service, right, free from attachment, without a desire for gain, and do it for me, and do it in knowledge. And you name me the devotee who can say that's what Krishna is saying in the Gita. Right? And what is he trying to do? Get Arjuna to follow his varnashram duties without attachment. In the beginning, first chapter, he's starting with dharma. Right? And so he's trying to get him to follow his dharma, but without attachment. He's doing it because he's attached. He wants to get Duryodhana, he wants the kingdom, he wants all these things. Then when he sees he's not going to get it, then he doesn't want to do his duty. So that's ignorance, that's passion. Giving up your duty because you don't see that you'll benefit from it, that's passion. So Krishna is telling him, no, you're supposed to do your duty because what else are you going to do? Right? Means either you follow what God's given you to do or you're going to make it up. The conditioned soul can't get away from it. You can't be free. You can't be independent. So therefore, then you do it, but without attachment. And if you... So that's renunciation. But if you take it to the next level, is you do it simply to please Krishna, the result's his, that's sannyas. And if you do that out of devotion, then that's bhakti. And then you'll hear devotees sit around for years to discuss whether Varanashram is valid for us as Vaishnavas or not. These people don't know the Gita. Krishna is simply saying, you do this. And then, what have the Acharyas given us? They've given us these things. They're not conditioned. They live under a tree. But they write books, fat books, for us who are conditioned. And these books mention these things. But they have to be done in the mood that the Acharya gives. Just following Varanashram the way we want to is not enough either. It has to be the way we're given it. What is the mood of it? How much we use it to organize our life. Because taking it more than that is also, then it's Niyamagraha. Throwing it out is Niyamagraha. Keeping it too much is Niyamagraha. Rupa Goswami throws them both out. So what's the middle line? That's set by the Acharyas, not by us. And it doesn't matter how many people say, it still doesn't change the truth. That's the thing. Billions of people may have a different idea. It doesn't matter. The Acharya says what is truth. So that's the point, is how to bring it out. Are they really ready to bring it out? Okay, why is it there? Why do unjust things happen to you? Why does this happen? Why does that? Why are the obstacles? Because you deserve it. 101%. Because you have a mentality where you need that to make you aware of it. You've been unjust, therefore an unjust situation to you makes you aware of justice. Then, now you have to decide, is justice worth it? Or is surrendering to Krishna and letting him deal with it more worthwhile? Justice is important, then great, stay here. There's plenty of opportunities to be in just, rightful situations. You know, so much opportunity. You can be a lawyer. So many things, but it's there. So are devotees willing to listen to that? I sometimes see no. I was asked a question in Tawako, Indian community. Why is it that our children are so different from us? we value this Krishna consciousness, we value this, we value that. Why is it our children are so different? And seeing the children, seeing them, I said, your children aren't different at all. They're exactly like you. They've taken the exact same values that you had, just they have different details how they apply it. You wear karmic clothes, but you wear karmic clothes a little bit more to what the Indians in India wear karmic clothes. They wear what the Americans wear. But the point is to wear something modern and this and that and be, you know, trendy. So they look trendy according to what they think, their old, you know, their group. Exactly the same. So that's the point. If you really want to deal with it, then are they willing to look themselves that square in the face? I've seen very few devotees who are willing to take it that way. It means if they are, great, they'll move forward very quickly. But I see many like to cite it's someone else's fault. The obstacle is someone else's fault. It's not my fault. Yes?
I think that's what I was getting at. You know, rather than taking this club and beating down kind of an introspective approach to rooting out anarchism, which I think there was a tendency that a movement had. You know, then we see the devotees that have gone on for many years, and somebody had a good devotee, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Because, you know, like, I think what Socrates said that a life unexamined is a life not worth living. So the point I was trying to drive at was, you know, that it's very normal for doubts to come up. It's very normal for there to be crises of faith. And it's not something like, well, just ignore it, just turn away, I shouldn't be thinking like this. We shouldn't be thinking like this, but there's a way to deal with it.
Yeah, but it's not so much a crisis of faith, because we've already put our faith in the beginning. It's a matter of removing the doubt so we can move on. Like Arjuna, the whole Gita is just his doubts. Doubts and even sometimes misgivings. But he doesn't have any lack of faith in Krishna. That's why he surrenders to him, so he'll remove it. That's the problem. Is due to this lack of subtlety, because to be introspective means subtle. And so due to lack of introspective means lack of subtlety. So they can't tell the difference between doubt, misgiving, and faith. Like that. Like, who can explain the difference between a doubt and a misgiving? A doubt is something you don't understand intellectually. You know, it just doesn't make sense. It seems contradictory. Misgiving means you don't like it. Very logical, and that, but you don't like it. I don't like doing this. You know, I have to go to Mangalarti. Okay, I understand Brahma Horta, I understand this, best time there, but I don't like it. That's a misgiving. So point is, if we've made that point of the faith, then it's a matter of, I identify this, I may go on in my ignorance, and then someone points it out, or I notice it myself. Then it's a matter of, okay, now how to get rid of this? Because I have made the commitment to have that faith. So now, who do I approach, how do I do, how do I talk, how do I deal?
Also, Krishna, Arjuna, when Prabhu also mentioned, yes, it's normal to doubt.
Yeah.
If we have pity in ourselves, or it's okay to doubt.
Yeah.
If we have no pity at all, right? You know what we understand, the rope is tall.
Yeah.
Krishna didn't find him, it's okay, it's okay. He said,
Yeah. So if you can handle that, then it's... Because the thing is the main problem in this is ego. That's the main difficulty, is the ego. Because that's why we're here. We've started out is that our ego is... We've gone against the will of the Lord because of ego. We'll be the Lord. Why this guy? Why not me? You know? So then that's what we have to deal with. And unfortunately, it's the most painful of all the things to deal with. You know?
Therefore, don't be ashamed if it happens.
What he's saying is that it should be
a big front, big devotee, and instead they're all falling apart.
No, that's not good. But the same time is then in this is there has to be a sense of community. That person has to be able to choose people that they are going to be confidential with. And this idea is just because they're a prominent figure, therefore their life is private, is public property, public domain. That's nonsense. That's demoniac. That means that person will never surrender. I've watched big God brothers go because of that. Right? You just look at the history. Who went first? Bhavananda. Right? He revealed his mind. He took confidence with his god brothers. He told them whatever they wanted to hear. As the second they got out of the door, they're blabbing it to everybody. Nonsense. Prabhupada would have chastised them. He chastised the devotees for saying comments about Madhavisa. But that's considered in truth, this modern concept of nonsense truth. It's demoniac. It's attachment to our demoniac background. Then seeing that, do you think Bhavananda or Ramesh are going to stick around? They're not that stupid. Right? Bhavananda has a lot of tolerance. He could handle it for another 2 years. And then he split. The others just saw, I can't handle that. Their egos were too big. They just left. And it's exactly what Prabhupada said would happen. You deal like this, this is what happens. So this is what the Acharya says. That's what we have to follow. But no, we're so much more intelligent than the Acharya. We set our modern standards. We deal as, you know, bulls in china shops. And then everybody's supposed to say it's fine. But that's not disciple. Disciple means what the Acharya does. You do what Prabhupada says, do as I do. That doesn't mean imitate. It means follow in the footsteps. So following the footsteps means following the order. So he gave the order. So then that's how we do. So there has to be confidentiality. Nowadays there's no confidentiality. Who wants to reveal to anybody? So why will anyone take shelter of anyone else? Or they'll go to another place where you can get some confidentiality. You know? Or they just stay in their own little circles and stay away from everybody else. So the whole point is this modern new agey idea is destroying the whole fabric of Vaishnava culture and philosophy. And those who buy into it will be destroyed. And those who understand it and stay away from it, then they'll progress. You can watch it now. It's just destroyed. Because what? It's mundane. It's impersonalism. It's cloaked in personalism, just like a dagger is cloaked in a nice jeweled case. But it's not personal at all. Because it's only one-way relationship. Right? You're the victim. Everything goes your way. Not that you have anything you can come back with. It's impersonal. It's not. It's just putting different people at the center of the universe. It's not how to establish what is the proper relationship between people and then establishing that they do that. No, because that's restriction. So, therefore, then you lose something there. You lose something very seriously. So devotees have to see what are the implications of mixing devotional service with modern newspeak. You know? Like that. So it's something one has to be very, very careful about. So these principles are there. People have to be introspective. They have to ask. Human life means to inquire. So we can inquire about others, but we also have to be able to inquire about ourselves. And then there's an etiquette for doing that. And if we do that, that will create health. But if we speculate and go into, you know, Dr. Spock says this, or, you know, like that, you know, he's got great pointed ears, you know, something, you know, that it doesn't mean we're going to get anywhere, you know. So we have to be very, very careful, you know. Western stuff's based on Freud. Freud only studied crazy people. He was not known for studying sane people. At least Covey studied somebody who was successful. No, but he just studies people who are nuts. And then, Prabhupada mentioned, the Shastra says, people go crazy because of too much lust. And so what does he come to the conclusion? Therefore, the crazy people are all lusty. So therefore, the basis of the whole psychology is lust, is sex. And then our devotees are going to base their psychological interactions with each other on that. And they don't even see that what it is that his point that's there, that he bases it on, is connected to the Shastra. And not only that, what about sane people? You know? Someone brought that up to Prabhupada, that famous one, you know, where Prabhupada said, the Oedipus complex, you know, is that in the West, you know, the son wants to have, you know, an intimate relationship with his mother. So Prabhupada looked at him and said, maybe in your country, not mine. You know? So, like that, is that it's all there. The systems are there, what to do is there. It's all talked about, the whole technicalities of it. But devotees generally tend to avoid it. It's too technical. Oh, we just chant. But they can sit there and read, you know, for days the latest bestseller on how to make your life successful and quote that, but they won't read Rupa Goswami or Bhaktivinoda Thakur or like this who tell you what you do. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you talk about a devotee, you know, something they've done wrong, but it doesn't have anything to do with your life or it doesn't have anything to do with the other person's life in actually correcting it, your life, avoiding it. He says it's prajalpa, even though it's about a devotee. Like that. It says it's prajalpa. So, how much prajalpa is going on? Just because it's about a devotee, then we can talk about it? This guy did this nonsense, so what? Okay, now if from that he did this nonsense, how did he get into that nonsense? What happened with that? How can we avoid getting to that nonsense itself? You know, what was his consciousness that he was up, got into that? What was the situation? Then we know how to avoid it. Or we know how to correct it, so we can remove it, so others don't fall into that. That's okay. But just to talk, hey, did you hear? That's prajalpa. Just because it's about a devotee doesn't mean that there's any benefit at all. It'll only pollute the consciousness. But that's commonplace now. That's normal. That's normal talk. You know? The idea that prajalpa is bad is basically is fallen by the wayside. But things like varnashram or this, oh, those are bad words. You can't use them. There's some circles you cannot use the word varnashram. You can't say Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, especially you can't say Shudra. And so this is the problem, is that the devotees have missed this point, is that the very thing that can cure their disease is the very thing they refuse to take. Because it doesn't taste good, right? That's the problem. Mode of goodness is bitter in the beginning, nice at the end. Well, mode of passion is nice in the beginning and bitter at the end. So being habituated to that path, then you'll see devotees will generally take that path by habit, you know? So that's the thing. It's not their fault, it's their habit. That we're only speaking, we're not speaking that people fall into that trap. That just happens. That's just the way it is. What we're speaking is if people cling to that and claim that this is a proper path and a proper devotional path given by the acharyas is not, or doesn't apply, or Prabhupada was wrong, or, you know, times were different then, or, you know, all these kind of different things that people do to rationalize their own material attachments. That's what we're speaking on. That the attitude. That people fall into this is like you were saying, it's perfectly normal, one will say. But one can go on. It's just like you have a place, a senior man falls away, some other people fall away. Following that, other people stay. So how is it the one stayed and the others went away? What made the difference? Just they saw how to take advantage of their falling away to strengthen their own life, and the other person took advantage of it to enjoy life. Right? Oh, if he can't make it, I can't make it. Why, I've been looking for an excuse why I can't make it. And now I found one. Or if he's enjoying, why I should be missing out. So, like that. You know? So everybody, the point is to go back to Godhead. The door is open for everybody at every moment. And everybody can make that choice to continue. At the same time, everybody can make the choice to give it up. So one can say the situation is not ideal, but, you know, was it ideal when we joined? You know, our parents were ecstatic that we took up devotional service. Our friends thought we looked really great with the bald head, you know, like that. And, you know, the whole society, Western society thought that was great, you know, a bunch of, you know, they don't smoke, they don't drink, they don't eat meat, they don't have illicit sex. You know, it's like, you know, everything that they've always wanted, right? No, it means the obstacles then were so much more, but there was that faith, that vision. So if we maintain that and then see how to work it, we worked out the obstacles then. Some didn't. Their parents said, oh, what about us, this, that, don't you love us anymore? And okay. And then they didn't join. So that same thing is there now. You can see an obstacle and either then see how to deal with that obstacle in Krishna consciousness and go beyond it, or we can be overwhelmed by it like that. So, as you were saying, then it's a matter of introspection, it's a matter of confidentiality with devotees, it's a matter of creating a forum in which you can discuss these things, enlighten yourself about tools that you can use, take advantage of others' experience, and then it will progress very, very nicely. So it's the problem that these things, we get so much out of the Gita, and this is a point of difficulty. We get so much from other stories, and they're points of difficulty, right? So much came out of Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, Krishna, Arjuna, the Pandavas, and it's all in points of difficulty and how they surrendered and how they overcome the obstacles to become Krishna conscious. So that's foregone, that there will be doubts, there will be difficulties, we'll become aware of our misgivings, but we have to just be aware that it's always been there and not be deluded by Maya. That we've gone on so long and never had certain material desires doesn't mean when they come up that they weren't there. It's just that we've gone deep enough that now it's that one's come out. You know, first you'll deal with ones that you know of from this life, then you'll start to deal with ones from other lives. So when you start getting to ones you don't know where you come from, then it means you're getting somewhere. But some devotees take it that, you know, I should be true to myself and follow and this and that and, you know, like that. You know. So that's a mistake. That's Maya. So if they understand is, okay, that's there, well, how does that connect with the others? Like, okay, I had grosser ones that I can identify. This one I can't identify. What's the link? Because all it is this is a deeper manifestation of ones I got rid of. So all I have to do is continue the same process. It's not new. It's old. Like that. You know, plus it's purified. In the beginning, someone's just attached to sensuality with women. Then it becomes purified. Then they become attached emotionally to women. Right? Then that becomes purified. Then they become attached to distinction, adoration, and profit. You know, on a settled platform. And then they get rid of that. Then it's a matter of being, you know, the Lord. I'm either God or I'm the devotee. Right? Both of those are the two things. Right? Then you get rid of that, you make it. So it's always going to take subtler and subtler and subtler, right? We get rid of our gross desires, now we have subtler, heavenly desires. You get rid of those, and you have desires of Mahajana Tapa Satyaloka. You get rid of those, and you have ones of Kaila, you know, of that the impersonal, you know what I mean, or the liberation. You get rid of those, and you got Vaikuntha. You get rid of those, and you get Dwarka. You get rid of those, and you get the Vrindavan. So it's always going to go through stages like that. So, if one understands this, then it works nice, like that. And then, if one has confidence that one has those kind of friends and people that one can go to, then your life will be fine. But if one finds one doesn't have, then one should try to find, like that. And then one can move forward. Is that like that? Because it's Prabhupada's given us the tools, we just have to be subtle enough to take them. That's the thing. Because they have meaning. Like that. It's just like you take your honesty. But how do you define honesty? You know? It's just like, oh, we try to be honest and be politically correct, but it doesn't always work. Some of this has bad reactions. But honest means, okay, we've done. Okay, instead of yes, yes, we made so many mistakes and this and that. And now we've corrected that by taking up things that Prabhupada didn't want. Because that's what we perceive is what the karmis are looking for. And they still don't care. But if you take ones as, okay, we've made these mistakes and we move forward, now we're doing this, and it's within the realm of what Prabhupada wanted, then they'll say, okay, these guys have a direction. Because otherwise they're calling the shots, they're calling the direction. Whatever direction you said politically correct today, tomorrow it's out. You know? That was it. And he's like, the people of peace, love, this, that. They bomb the, what is it? The Twin Towers. And it's like every third door you see a flag, an American flag, patriotic, out there, get them, join the army, this, that. You know, backs of cars, flags, everywhere flags. And this goes on great and everything, you know. And then they declare war on Iraq. Then suddenly, then everybody's back to peace, love, this, that. So it's like anyone who puts their faith in modern political correctness has to be inexperienced. You have to see what's the pulse, but you have to see where is the source in our own culture and philosophy, and present that in their language. B.I., Prabhupada's idea was to present to scientists in their language our philosophy, not their philosophy. So the same way as political correctness then means you say our philosophy as it is, but in language they can understand. Talk more quietly, be more nice, and say it in very pleasant, you know, euphemistic terms and stuff like that. And then the people will really feel that, you know, you have a heart and you know how to feel. And that's all. You can say exactly the same thing. And then you get it done. But when we change our position, then we're not supported by devotional service. Still nothing prospers. Right? You can see zones today. They just take it as it is, present it as it is. They flourish. They make devotees. They make money. They build temples. They're going on. Other ones, so politically correct, this, that, they're getting nowhere. They still have more deities and devotees in the temple. And that's after 20 years. You know? So one should, after a while, start to think. If one says, okay, these things didn't work in devotional service, it's been long enough now that we can say, well, adjusting things and trying to be all new agey, politically correct, that doesn't work either. So therefore, where's the middle? Then look back to what Prabhupada gave us. Did we follow what Prabhupada said properly? And if we did, okay. Then that's one thing. See what went wrong. Did we present it properly? Like that. But if we find maybe we didn't do it properly, then we have to revisit that and then see what is the proper way to do it. Because the systems that Prabhupada gave, they work. They're working today. You hear people say they don't work. I know temples today that are using exactly the same techniques of early days. Devotees just going out on Harinam, distributing prasad, distributing books, going out in the dhotis and all this, going and doing PR exactly as they are, going in karmi clothes. Like that, going into the educational field as devotees, as a Vaishnava university, I've seen it. Well, other places in the world will say this won't work. We've tried it; it doesn't work. No, they tried it. They weren't on top of the pulse. They missed something, and they made a mistake. Now they can't be at fault. Prabhupada has to be at fault. Prabhupada didn't know. You know, well, that was then. I was hippies, right? Hippies were lazy. You know? The modern people aren't lazy. But they still have that same new agey head. How much more advantageous? Plus, they have jobs. They can do things. So they could live in a house and make them life successful. They don't have to be given handouts. They're not on the dole. Right? They're not on welfare. Right? So how much they can do? You know, they know how to do more than just sticking a flower in the end of a gun or something. You know? So, they can do things. They're professionals. They're this, they're that. They can do so many things. They just want direction. And if they decide to join the temple, they're dynamic. They know how to work with other people. They're, you know... In other words, because we have to remember is that Lord Chaitanya starts at the bottom. The first ones to be saved are the lowest, the wretched, most disgusting, most terrible, the stinkiest, smelliest. Right? Not that those days were the golden days. No, to now is more golden than then. Like that. That's the thing. Though Prabhupada said they had a sense of renunciation. That was their strength. They would drop anything, give up anything. That was their strength. Well, nowadays they don't have that same mood of renunciation. But Dynasism, it's much more now. New people are much more. Renunciation, definitely less. As much as philosophical, yeah. No, it's
of the two. A little more refined to have sensual fall down than it does to have a
It depends. Philosophical means it depends upon how philosophical. It could also be very refined. And yeah, it's just one is more the mind, one is more the intelligence. But of the two, philosophical fall down is worse, because then you're deviated from the path. Sensual, then at some point you wake up and go, this is stupid. But then your whole philosophy, everything's intact. But the other one, when you wake up, then you already have this attachment. It means you can get, means we from our philosophy and practice can understand that giving up sensuality for something higher is there. It's obvious, because we can even see it in karmic life. You know, it's like, you know, someone who restricts themselves then gets ahead. You know, it means that the person who you know, takes a part-time job and then rest of the time enjoys themselves has very little money. The person who restricts themselves, works more hard and saves his money, has more money. So you can obviously see it. So then there is that, you can go, especially if you're properly situated, you get off, you can go back. But if you get philosophically distracted, then you're off the path. Then you're not properly situated. So even though you're following the regular principles, you're a nice guy, you're moral, you're upstanding, and this and that, but the problem is you're not on the path. So it looks nice. Yeah, means philosophical deviation might even come up, but if one really wants to know, one will go to somebody and try to have it corrected. Because it doesn't sound right, it pops up in the mind. Because that's where they start, you know? It just, the mind simply differentiates between them. The intelligence only differentiates, it doesn't choose. See, if someone says we're being intellectual, or it's not very intellectual. Intellectual only discriminates that there are different options. But the actual choosing of it and presenting it, that's the mind. Because out of five options, you pick option A. Why did you pick option A? That's your mind. Someone else, out of five options, picks C. Why? Because of your mind, your conditioning. Like that. So the intellect only does that, but your decision is the mind. The mind, out of all the options that are there, likes one thing because it's somehow or another connected with the purposes or your own conditioning or what you see for yourself or this or that. Or, you know, it's like, I'm interested in position, I'm interested in facility. I've been collecting for the temple for, you know, the last 15 years. I've collected $500,000. I'm driving down the road, you know, going out of Sankirtan, and suddenly hits me as, hey, I'm getting older. I have nothing. What do I have? I've done all this for the society. What do I got? Nobody cares about me. No one's given me anything. This and that, like that. And then instead of going out on Sankirtan and that, they go to their own place and pick for themselves. Like that. And that's a true story. Yeah. The devotee it happened to was telling me that this is what happened. Just one day, it was just you drive along and go, hey, what about me? You know? So then, that's the mind. Is that all these options are there at any time the mind can pick everything it wants. So then it takes that. Because it sounds good. I want prestige, I want position. That person had that kind of attitude. So then, I'm not getting it from this. So I'm collecting the money and being the big guy to get that. But at the same time, it's devotional service. But nowadays, I'm not getting that anymore. I'm still not the big guy. I'm a big collector. I'm a big this and that. But there's other people, and there's other things coming up, and other things are happening in the movement rather than just collection. So I'm not as prominent as I was back in the early 80s. You know. So then now what? And so then they get distracted. So then they think, well, I'll make my own money. And then in my own circles, I'll be prestigious. So, you know, down at the workforce, my own women, my this, my that, they'll at least respect me. It's ego. Yeah. It means by your ego, that's your identity. Then everything comes. That's why if you want to change it, you have to change the ego, one's identity, or at least purify it. It means a conditioned identity remains. You know, the body doesn't change. but you can purify it on how you see it, what is your value systems in dealing with it. That you can change. You know? That you can change. Other things you can't change. Yeah, that's there. You can't get rid of it. Your nose isn't going to change just because you change. I'm a devotee of Krishna. Now you have a different nose. You know? It won't change. That stays. You know? Yeah, they're mixing. Because you have attachment, means, what's that? Vita raga bhaya krodha, right? Yeah. So you have attachment, you have anger, and you have envy. So attachment is materialism. Envy is impersonalism. Anger is voidism. Like that. So when people become angry, then they kick everything out. So that's voidism. So then you see, something goes wrong in the society, okay, you know, you have a problem with gurus or sannyasis or senior men or leaders. Some problems came up, so we throw them out. That's anger. That's Buddhism. That's not Vaishnavism. It's not Shastra. Like that. You know, so these kind of things, they come up. So what we do is mix. That's apasampadayas. Apasampadayas are Vaishnavism mixed with something. You know, like that. Daravesh, that's mixed with Islam. You know, Sahajya, that's mixed with Buddhism. Something. You know, everything becomes easy. Sahaj. And that's what you see now. Oh, we just chant. We don't worry for all these technical things. No, don't get too, you know, everything like this. Politically, it's complicated. Managerially, it's complicated. Bureaucratically, it's complicated. But devotionally, very simple. That's Sahajya. Maybe they're not, you know, rolling around on the ground. But it's the same mentality. You know. Because they speak devotion and then they're off enjoying the senses. So it's all the, whatever you mix it with, they're already done. 13 apasampradayas are already established. And those are just Vaishnavism mixed with something that shouldn't be there. Yeah. Yeah, it's the same. Like that. So that's why we have to know these things so that we avoid that. We can see what's going on, how to avoid ourselves falling into the same traps. That's the meaning of education. So that's what Prabhupada wanted. You know, it's that Prabhupada wanted that from 75 he started pushing education. But if you look at the history, very few took it seriously. I think Satsarup Maharaj got into it for some time, a few others here and there. And it wasn't, I think, until the mid-80s and Burijan made a push on it. You know, and then a few here and there, you know, we have Janmasthami Prabhu is working on it. So very few are trying to educate the devotees. You go, most temples, the temple, there's no time. You get up in the morning, Mangalarti, chant your rounds, out on the pick, back in the evening, take your milk, go to bed. Reading, you know, you can read on the bus. You know, that's it. Because if you're too educated, you ask questions. You know, how come I have to go out and, I mean, we live very simply, why do I have to go out and collect for, you know, I work, you know, 12 hours, 18 hours a day. How come I got to collect to, you know, give 10 times the amount it takes to maintain me for all these temple officers who only put in, you know, 1-2 hours a day serving? Don't ask questions. You know? Oh, they're not sincere. They went away. Okay. And we got, you know, 5 sincere devotees in our temple and another 300, you know, guys outside who... So that's the thing. It's that Prabhupada wanted it. Very few people take it up. That's important. So then you educate, then you can get somewhere. Then this movement's dynamic. Right? It means devotees can't explain Prabhupada's books. Therefore, they want to change the books so it's politically correct today. Right? And then after a few years, they want to change them again. You know, but we've already seen this. I mean, at least when I was a kid, we grew up, we had to read the book, right? 1984. I mean, that's what was going on. What's the difference? It was just a big bureaucracy that no one's in charge. What's the difference? It's the modes of nature. So just because devotees do it, does that make it any better or something special? Right? So that's the whole thing, is just because devotees take up the karmic things, they can engage those in Krishna's service. That's no problem. But if they identify with them and think those are superior to devotional service, then they become distracted. And the same thing will happen to them as happens to the karmis. Because it's a motion that you stick your finger in the socket, you get electrocuted. It's the same. It's not that I'm a devotee. It doesn't happen. Because the devotee doesn't get electrocuted, right? The body does. The body is then engaged in devotional service. The mind is engaged in devotional service, but they're not devotees, right? Your mind, your intelligence, your ego, your body are not devotees. You have to engage them in Krishna's service. The devotee has to engage them. Then they become spiritualized. And then it comes to the point where then you are dealing with your original mind, intelligence, ego, and body. Then, no problem. But until then, unless we engage it, it's not enough. It's not enough to just, we have our own philosophy. It works for us. Okay, that's fine. But don't try to put it on the rest of the world. Okay, last point. Yes.
Sometimes it is obvious that even initiating spiritual matters are rather there to distract from the lives.
Yeah, yeah.
So would you feel better to have some instance within this come, or a more devotees who are aware of this fact, and can be approached by anyone? Like, I am anonymous, you know, so there's no very good man to anybody else.
Yeah, no, it's there. But the opportunity is there. That's the point, is there's always this opportunity, but it's being aware of it and taking advantage of it. You know? Like that. So that's the one thing I've seen, is that those who are aware of it take more advantage of it, and they get farther. Like that. And those who don't, then get distracted. Like that. And because they're not aware, then it's not their fault. It's devotional service, or this devotee, that devotee. But if devotees are aware of this, then they'll be able to take advantage. So it's a very important thing to be aware that that's necessary. You know, and it has to be that confidentiality is there, because whose business is it? It's not everybody's business. If it's everybody's business, then it has to be taken all the way down, right? Then we have to know exactly, you know, what, you know, is going on. You know, temple president. Okay, the temple president had a kid. Okay, what position did he use? Did he use one authorized by Shastras, or did he just use one that he liked? You know, so why can't we know that? Oh, that's private. So why is that private, but the guru, his life is not private, or the sannyasi is not private, or some other preacher is not private? Who is making these decisions? Who has decided is public domain? Prabhupada didn't make that decision. Krishna didn't make that decision. Who has made that decision? Who are the fools that buy into it? And this destroys the site, because if there's no interaction, confidentiality, there is no rasa, there is no community. Community means that group of people you can have put your trust in. They may chastise you, but when push comes to shove, then they're going to get it. Like you see, Duryodhana and Yudhishthira may have problems, but when the Gandharva comes to fight with Duryodhana, then you have to fight with the Kurus. Then Yudhishthira and his brothers are there. So they may have something inside, but not outside, no. So that's community. So if confidentiality is not there, then how will anything else happen? So in the name of being personal and all that, then it's impersonal. Because Western culture is impersonal. It's not personal. Only the Vedic culture is personal. Only the Vedas know what a person is. The West does not know what a person is. If they know anything what a person is, where'd they get it from? They got it from their religion. They didn't get it from non-religion. That you're supposed to be nice, good, where does that come from? Does it come out of business? Business people aren't nice. Well, if they want something from you, then they'll be nice. It comes out of religion. So it's come out of their Christianity, their Judaism, their Islam. It's come out of there. It didn't come from... And where did that come from? That comes from God. So now the highest form of that religion is being given. And devotees don't take it. It means they missed it. They missed the boat. Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's there. One ego is there, but we have to remember, life comes from life. So someone who has life can give life. Someone who doesn't can't. That's the whole thing. So someone who understands, they can interact. Someone who doesn't won't. They'll do their own funny things. That's, these things are, so the point is devotional service is perfect, so therefore all we have to do is follow it and everything's fine. Of course, our own purification, our own anarthas are there. We have to get rid of those. But otherwise, then it's there. It works. That's the thing, it works. It's, we don't have to go somewhere else. You know, you want to go somewhere, you figure out what's good, bad. This is Niti Shastra. Prabhupada said, Chanakya Niti. From studying that, you can see there's only about 6-7 points of Niti, of ethics. Everything else is detailed out of that. You know? These things, you know, do something that's proper for your position. You know? Like that. Don't be foolish enough to think you're going to come to a fool. Like that. Money you have to is temporary. You know, protection is temporary. Like that. In the material world. You know, someone who's virtuous, that is someone to be respected, not other qualities. No, we're talking on the material platform. Like that. So they mention these things. So that's, that there is a lot more than any modern book on ethics, morality, anything, even what the Bible or this or that will say. And so Prabhupada's given us our codes of ethics. The devotees will say, oh, you know, we have a philosophy, but no, but devotees aren't moral. Because we don't follow our own system. And then they'd have to define what's morality. And then where are they going to base it on? It's going to be their own, you know, middle class concepts. You know, that's where it's going to come. If you boil it down and chase them after each point and ask why on every point, that's what it's going to get back to. They won't have it, and probably very few will even be able to take it back to the Shastra or the Western ones. So it's just their feeling when they grew up, their mother, father, friends, or their own determination. You know, they read, was the guy the prophet, you know, and this and that. You know, pick something up, you know, King Arthur or something. Bugs Bunny. Nice guy. Pleasant, huh? Mickey Mouse, yeah, he's a nice guy. Likes kids. You know. He's okay. Of course, W.C. Fields might not appreciate it. But, so, like that, it just goes. It's just speculation. That's the point. If it's not based on this, it's speculation. So we always have to be careful that also within dealing this, it's not speculation. So that's why it's important to take that association. Then you have a camaraderie. Association means what you do when you don't have anything to do. That's association. You're not going to see that devotee because you got to get something done. You're going to see that devotee just to be there. Then you can dadati pratigrinati guryam akidipichiri bhukte bhojayati. Then you get somewhere. But if it's only for business, then that's good. Of course, everything we do as business should be with devotees. But besides that, association means outside that. I don't have any other thing to get. That's association. So, where is it? Right? Devotees come here from all over the world, have meetings, and then they all disappear. Where is the association? No association. Prabhupada called everyone here. They'd all sit down at the Ganga for hours and read. I can remember. There were five different devotees. Sridhananda Maharaj was reading. I forget what he was reading. I think he was doing Gita. Satsarup Maharaj was doing, I think, was doing something. Ramashwar was doing another book. Yashodananda, Guru Kripa was doing another book, and you know, you just sat around. Devotees like bees, you know, you sit there and they read something, make some comments. I think Chutananda was doing a book. Then it gets too hot, then either the whole group or individuals go jump in the Ganga, come back out, sit there. That's what you do all day. And then in the evening come together, big kirtan, morning, Prabhupada's class, you know, and then the rest of the time you're running the toilet, you know. You know, so definitely exercise, you know. Like that, you know, so but I haven't seen that for years. So how there'll be a commonality? How can there be a common mood throughout the world if there's no association. Individuals are within that associate, and you see small groups of like-minded, but you don't see abroad. Like that. But the original crew, I'd see them, they just hang out. You know? Ramananda, this one, that one. They just all sit in there. I mean, they sit there between meetings. They just sat, talked, this, that, went to the Ganga, did things, read things. You know? You didn't have meetings outside the meetings. Like that. Only if it was real emergency. You know, nowadays, of course, everything's emergency. But in those days, it was not. Prabhupada wanted to be originally 3 hours. GBC meeting, 3 hours. Because they're supposed to, what's going on? How to progress? And then he said 3 days. I think then it got up to 10. But the whole point is it's the idea of Mayapur was association, not administration. Administration is part. That has to be done. But association is the main. If that's there, then everything goes. If it's not there, then what's the juice in life? You don't get association. What's wonderful in life? That's the thing. Nothing special. Because you get something done, but if there's not people that you can count on and associate with, what do you care? We have a greatly clean, nice, managed temple, but if there's no one you can interact with, it's not going to be very nice. You know? And some of the nicest temples I've seen have been some of the worst managed ones, you know? Great temple president, nice devotee, everyone loves him, but couldn't manage his way out of a wet paper bag, you know. So, but you know, it goes on by Krishna's mercy. So Prabhupada wanted it to be both, you know, good leadership, nice association, dynamic, and good management. Then you can do big things. But of the two, then better the nice association, and devotees are happy. Okay, so we should probably end here. We've gone well over our time. Gruntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadita Bhaktivrinda ki, and Nita Gaura Premanandi ki.
Join us back to the Buddha.